Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Suckers in the back seat. Mama's home hungry.
Mark my words. Michael Knight will die.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor.
You wish to eat. You wish to drink. You wish to reproduce.
Yeah.
Which one first?
Excuse me, I was wondering if I could get a Hilstern clone.
I think you're in the wrong department.
Sleigh bells ring, Greg is pooping in the trash, he's a scooping. That's all I wrote.
I'm pooping in the trash,
and then you're scooping. That's all I had for you. I had nothing else. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's great. It's caught me off guard.
This is what I did while I was waiting for you to get into Zoom tonight. I was trying to write a song that I could sing about you pooping in a trash can.
So that's all that you got? That's it?
Because
just those two lines?
Because then you texted me that you forgot to plug in your external camera and got pissed off. So then I went and cleaned. So that's what I did.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, I forgive you. That's fine.
So, Greg, I wanna wish all of our listeners a very Merry Christmas, because by the time this releases, we'll be 2 days after Christmas, but you and I are recording early because our normal recording night is Christmas Eve, so, oh my God, my brain just completely shut off.
So our normal recording night is Christmas Eve annually, so we've actually been, it's a ruse, we've been recording only on Christmas Eves for the past 4 years.
So do the math, we've released 400 and some odd episodes in our 4 years of recording, but we only record on the last four Christmas Eves, and that's it.
So we do about 100 hours on one day. In a 24-hour day, we'll record 100 hours of podcast.
I'll blow your mind even more, guys. This episode, we're lying a little bit more. This episode, we're actually recording 10 minutes before I'm due to drop the episode on December 27th, so figure that one out. We are recording this at 7:50 a.m. on December 27th, 10 minutes before we drop the episode at 8.
That's amazing.
Figure that one out.
We're talking really fast.
Hey, Greg.
What, Dave?
Welcome to Champ and Klein, the Knight Rider Years, a podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I'm your host, Dave Champa.
I'm your other host, Greg Klein.
Now, listen, guys, if you're new to the show, I mean, you joined at a really weird time because Greg and I are three episodes away from finishing the entire run of Knight Rider. But you came at the right time, though, because we're about to jump into another episode and another show in the next month. The basic idea is that Greg and I will choose a classic show from the 80s and dissect it episode by episode. We poke fun at these shows a whole hell of a lot, and I think Knight Rider has endured I'd say between Knight Rider and MacGyver, Knight Rider has endured probably the most fun poking, if you will.
It had more to offer in the fun poking department.
It's true.
I think, just in general.
It's true.
Yeah, it had more to offer. It had more substance. And didn't get all weird. Well, it got weird.
It did.
It wasn't seven seasons worth of weird.
Right.
You know?
Excuse me. But basically, we do this, and we make fun of these shows, and we poke fun at them out of complete love and admiration for quite possibly the greatest era of television that has ever been in the last 100 years. How long has TV been around? 400, 200 years?
I think the Sumerians, the ancient Sumerians might have had it.
Oh, okay.
Only that it was papyrus-based.
Oh, all right. I appreciate that about them.
Yeah.
Greg,
Dave,
how the hell have you been? How you got Christmas plans coming up? What are you guys? What are you and the wifey doing for Christmas this year?
We're not doing anything. We're doing some Zoom hangouts. Or at this point, as everyone's listening, we have done some Zoom hangouts. No, I don't know. This year's been weird. I can't believe that we're right on top of the holidays again.
God, I know.
And I haven't planned anything. I've just kind of been kept my head down, and I'm like, oh shit, it's the end of December. Look at that. What do you know? I have no idea.
Yep.
That's where I am. No idea what's going on.
So Kristen and I kind of made a promise to ourselves after everything that's happened that we just like, we needed to get everything done Christmas-wise as early as possible. But as is the Champa case, there's literally one gift left that will probably show up on Christmas Eve when we're having dinner, and it's part of my Secret Santa gift that hasn't arrived yet. So that it's just sort of our nature. It's like we always wait till the last minute, and we tried. We're having a very small gathering at our house this year, obviously, you know, for given COVID and everything, but we're being as safe as possible. So we'll have a pretty quiet Christmas, provided the weather decides to not rear its ugly head, because we're talking Christmas Eve, Christmas power outages across the state. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's supposed to be rainy and slushy and shitty.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's all. Yeah. I think that the weather as of late has been exhausting.
Yes. That's exactly
what it is.
That's it. It's kind of relentless. And, you know, we're not even. No, yesterday, it's December 22nd when we record this. Yesterday was only the first day of winter. And it just seems like we've been pummeled. We had a hell of a snowstorm last week. I mean, it dropped. Mm-hmm. Probably 16, 17 inches in my town. I don't know how many you guys got up north.
A lot. I don't know. All over the place with drifts. There were definitely 24-inch drifts. And then, yeah, on the top of my grill that we left on the deck, there was a good, you know, 12 to 14 inches just in a little, like, hat on top of the grill. So it was a lot. I mean, and it was kind of unexpected. We saw the storm coming. But they were like, oh, it's going to be worse south of us.
Bullshit.
Bullshit. Yeah, bullshit. Whatever. Yeah.
I mean, we got obliterated. And for the first time in my entire career working at the company I work at, the office decided to take a remote day. So all I had to do was, I think I said this last week, all I had to do was check the voicemail every hour at work and then call patients at the end of the day to confirm their appointments. That was it. And it was glorious.
Yeah. I mean, the working from home thing can certainly be nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't work from home. I went in and snowblowed at 10 o'clock at night.
I was going to say, you texted me at 1:45 that morning that you were just getting home and you were getting ready to jump into a nice hot shower.
Well, you told me to. I said, I'll probably get home around 2. You're like, all right, text me. And at 1:30 a.m., I texted you, said I was going to take a shower.
Now,
I didn't go to bed till 3 that night because I just couldn't. I was too awake.
Did you have to work the next morning?
Yeah, I went in at 12:30.
Oh, okay, good. Now, talk to me about how that – we had a lot of that snow, but is that part of your job that you have to go in and like clear out the property? Like,
yeah, because the building opens at 6.
Yep.
So it has to be clear for that.
Okay.
So like if I will do anything I can to not get up early, I would rather stay up late into the morning.
Oh God, yes.
Than get up early. So yeah, the storm ended around, I don't know, 7:30 or something like that.
Just about.
So after 2 hours of snow blowing my driveway, I went over to work. Luckily, I live nearby.
Right.
Went over there, and within an hour and a half, I was frozen because I was still kind of wet.
Yeah.
And I'm using this tractor-mounted snowblower, which is awesome, but it just blows snow, and I was just melted. And it was, you know, I got freezing cold, so I left. I came home, took a warm shower, warmed up, went back at 10, and wrapped up at 1 a.m.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. And it was that type of snow. Like, I did two swipes of snow blowing. I did one around 2 o'clock when the snow was at its heaviest just so I could get it clear. But it was like the wind was so bad that, like, I would come to the base of my driveway, and I couldn't look left because the wind was spitting so fast that it was like you could feel, like, the ice was just, like, smashing your face. I couldn't see to the left. My beard was just full of icicles by the end of the afternoon. And then I went back out at 6:30 after dinner, took another swipe, and my whole – I took, like, a late shower, and it was, like, absolutely glorious. But, yeah, it was just that everything was frozen. Like, my gloves were frozen through, my – pants, my boots, my everything was just cold. It was awful.
Yeah, it was crazy. And oh yeah, that's not just it. Not only did it snow a lot. Ooh, sounds good. Mm-hmm. The high temperature of that night was like 18 degrees.
Yes.
So yeah, it wasn't awesome.
I just hope it's not a sign of things to come for the rest of the winter, because it's going to be miserable. And I really felt it this week with everything, and you know, with COVID and not really being able to go anywhere. I really, really felt it hardcore this week.
Yeah. I'm climbing the walls a little bit.
Not a big fan of it. And the thing is, it's like I don't have the attention span right now to be able to sit down and, like, I used to, like, during my furlough, I was watching movies on movies on movies on movies. Like, I was, like, up all night. I don't have the forethought or the focus to even watch a 40-minute episode of anything. Like, I just can't sit down enough to focus my brain to watch, because 10 minutes into anything, I'm completely cooked, and it's like 3 hours later, I'm up.
Well, it's so frustrating after, you know, having been out of work for an extended period of time, but being taken care of.
Yes.
It's, you know, but you realize how much your day-to-day survival gets in the way of your personal mental well-being.
Yes.
Even though it might not be a lot, you might enjoy your job, you might enjoy this and that, but little things are just like slowly eat at you. So like I generally like my job. It's low stress. It's not like, you know, I don't have to deal with a lot of people.
Right.
I don't have to have like career decisions or anything like that. But the fact that I'm away from home for 8 solid hours and working pretty much straight through,
yeah.
By the end of it, you're kind of tired, and you kind of lose the ability to objectively think.
Yes.
So I miss that. So that's something I've really strived from this summer to carry through, is to be able to maintain that sort of mental openness, I suppose. And,
yep.
You know, it's hard.
And I just, like, I remember that, like, throughout the summer and through like the early, like late spring, early summer, like my mental clarity, we talked about this, I think, on one of our episodes back in the summer when we were both furloughed, like our mental clarity was such that like we were just getting shit done. Like we were focused, like we knew exactly, it was just like we were doing so much work and getting so much accomplished and just felt so good that now that once everything you go back to work and you then have to realize like, oh shit, like I actually have to go and do this for 40 hours a week to earn this living. Then that clarity kind of disappears, yeah. You know?
But it also this summer made me realize what I actually need to survive on, what to live on, you know, and live okay.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, okay, I can change my lifestyle a little bit and be fine on a lower paying job that's more fun. You know,
yep.
Closer to home and, you know, just less burnout. So that's it. Yeah. Learned a lot. 2020 has been an interesting year in a lot of respects.
I do. I do. It has.
I do. I do. 20. I do. 2020 the years respects and all. And fine. Great.
I don't 2020. And you know what? I'm setting no expectations for 21. That's all I'm going to say.
No.
All I know is that we're going to jump into Airwolf, and I can't fucking wait.
I know. Oh, fuck. I'm so excited.
It's going to be awesome. Greg, do you want to get into the episode?
We've wasted enough people's times. Let's do it.
We sure have. All right, guys. Here we go. It is Knight Rider Season 4, Episode 20, Night of the Rising Sun. So can I just, I have to preface everything, and I was going to talk about this at the end, but I have to say this now. One of my least, my biggest con of this entire episode. Now listen, I liked this episode. I actually enjoyed it more than I thought, but the villains in this episode were probably the most idiotic of anything, any villains we've seen in the entire 4 seasons. Like, I don't think we're spoiling much because we meet them at the very beginning. They're fucking ninjas, and they're the stupidest ninjas I have ever fucking seen. Ever.
But it's just so out of place. Like, where are we? What are we doing? And why do they have to be ninjas? Like, why? What is this?
Don't know. It reminded me of the Foot Clan from the Ninja Turtles.
I know. That's exactly what I thought. Ninja Turtles. So when was Ninja? 88? No, 86?
The original Ninja Turtles movie was 1990.
Was it really 90 or 89?
Yeah.
Because you're right. They look exactly like the foot soldiers because they were all dressed in black and they had like a red accent on their hood.
Yes.
Whereas the foot soldiers had those like weird like bug eye mesh things,
right.
But they had a red bandana. So it was very similar. I'm like, fuck, it's the foot soldiers. Where's the Shredder?
And their faces were painted black when you could see their eyes, but their whole, the part of the face that was exposed was just like painted black very poorly.
And so were their hands too.
I just like, because the episode opens in some sort of like an outdoor dojo, I guess is the best way to describe it, maybe?
I think it was the eccentric guy's private property that he built some, like, you know, Japanese-influenced garden. Like, really? That's what it was.
Is it a training garden? Like, is that what...
But it's the kind of thing, like, anytime you get like these clans of baddies, if you want to call them that, like it's like in, you know, Enter the Dragon, like you're walking through the training grounds and everyone's doing like ha ha, like all these like weird fights,
a fistful
kind of like
of yen.
Dispersed, yeah, exactly, the fistful of yen, just dispersed all over the place, each having their own little battles and doing things.
Right.
It's like the obligatory fighting montage, training montage for ninjas. Like, it was great, but it was so stupid.
So the guy, the main antagonist of the whole episode, his name is Tanika, and he's like walking through, like watching everybody training. And my favorite part of the scene is he walks up to one of the guys. He's kind of like a burlier ninja, and he just like takes the side of his fist and just drills him in the stomach and walks away.
But the guy's just like, oh, and just takes it. But I think it's funny. They're all fighting, and as soon as they notice that he's watching, they bow and they get out of his way as he walks through.
Yeah, you know,
just kind of interesting. But I didn't get a gauge of how many ninjas there were. I'm going to say that there's maybe a total of 10. Like, complete.
Yeah, because there's the scene nearing like the middle of the episode where Michael and RC, and we'll get there, where Michael and RC are about to be ritualistically killed and all the ninjas are standing around them. But yeah, you're probably right. There's maybe 10 or 15 of them just standing there. So the whole episode is based around Devin, of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, so, you said last week this is another friend of Devin's, right?
Yes. Nick O'Brien, who owns this, I don't even know what kind of company this is, O'Brien Industries? Like, what the hell do they do?
It's O'Brien Industries.
So it's just in an abandoned cannery?
Yeah, of course it's a cannery. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an abandoned cannery. It's something. It's O'Brien Industries. At this point, this is when we really start to realize that Devin is like... He is the foundation, because it's another friend of Devin's who has this strange, nondescript business
right.
that he's asking Devin for help with.
Yep.
You're like, ah, this guy's like importing stuff. I don't know. He's smuggling, but it looks like a bunch of oil rig workers, but I don't know, longshoremen. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're doing. So Devin knows the head of O'Brien Industries. His name is Nick O'Brien, and he and Devin served in the Korean War together in the early 50s. They both served aboard the Allied Command in the early 50s in the Korean War.
So that's interesting. So Devin got out of his POW camp and stayed in the military, apparently, and went straight into the Korean War. So that's even more story. But interesting. All right. I want to know more about Devin Miles, David.
I love the backstories, the little snippets we get. I wish we get more of it, obviously, but like this is technically the penultimate episode, but I wish we'd get, I want more little tidbits of this. So Nick, I have to say, well, we'll talk about it in a minute. So Nick is convinced, so Michael and RC are headed to O'Brien Industries to talk with Nick, and Nick is convinced that someone is trying to destroy his business. And as they're talking, an explosion on the other side of the abandoned cannery, because there's no one there.
That's the funny thing. It's clearly a big piece of property that they're filming this at.
Right.
And it's supposed to sound like a busy business, a thriving business. But yeah, it's mostly deserted. There's not a lot going on. The guard shack is like a dude like in a porta potty, pretty much.
Right.
You know, I don't. Whatever. Go ahead.
So as they're talking, an explosion goes off like way on the other side of the building, and Michael and RC get in kit and they head down to see what's going on. And as they come around the corner to the other side, they see four ninjas trying to break into the main office, and this big fight ensues. Now, you told me specifically, because I thought Michael just pulled a pair of nunchucks out of nowhere, but as I rewatched the scene, and you're absolutely right, Greg, he pulls his belt out and uses it as a set of nunchucks to then attack one of the ninjas who has a real set of nunchucks.
But it's like the craziest thing. Okay, they see the explosion, RC and Michael. Of course, RC's hanging around with Michael a lot more now for whatever reason. They're like buddying up more.
Yeah.
And RC's like, I guess those are the bad guys, huh? And of course, they're ninjas or whatever he says.
Right.
And yeah, so they both get out and charge them. So Michael, the first thing he does is he undoes his belt and he pulls his belt out.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is such a bar fight move. Like, he starts beating this ninja with his big old belt buckle. And from somewhere, RC finds this big old aluminum barn shovel and starts fighting with that.
I don't get it. But
the amazing thing is, the best part is, it's Michael and RC handedly knock these two guys out without any problems.
That was my next note. Michael handily beats the shit. They both just like obliterate these ninjas with absolutely no problem.
No, totally. And that's why RC has the barn shovel, because they beat the shit out of them, and Arcee didn't want to leave a mess on the ground, so he shoveled up the ninja shit and threw it in a pickup truck that
was
nearby.
So the bun shovel, what do we use a bun shovel for?
Well, that's what they use to help remove the buns from Princess Leia's head.
Okay.
From Carrie Fisher, after they were shooting, they had to use the bun shovel to pry the wig off.
So this is where we meet Nick's son, whose name is Coy. Michael finds him hiding in Nick's office, and the ninjas are looking to, basically they're going to kidnap Coy, but Nick, his dad, is willing to kind of give up everything he owns to protect Coy. Now, I have to say, I loved this dynamic because you don't see this very often with the father and son stuff. The fact that this is a father who will do anything for his son, and the son who loves his father and isn't like this strange dickhead who's trying to run away from his dad all the time. Mm-hmm. I actually really appreciated that we get that dynamic between them, because like this, mm-hmm. it's sort of a tragic story for Coy, because Nick tells the story that he ran into Coy's mother 15 years prior to this moment, and the woman gave Coy to Nick, and when Nick went back to meet the mother had just disappeared.
Well, yeah, she said that like they were having a lot of trouble and he was trying to help her out, and he's like, between my bad Japanese and her broken English, like, we figured out that someone was after her.
Right.
So he put them up in a hotel to keep them safe.
Yeah.
And when he went back to check on them, only Coy was left, the infant. Yeah, and the mother was long gone.
It was kind of a tragic moment. So Nick, you know, did what any person would do. He adopted Coy, and like, he's my son, and I love my son, and I'll do anything for him. And I really did like that dynamic. I thought it was just a nice change of pace, mm-hmm. because you always see that, like even MacGyver, and when he met his son for that first time, they were estranged because MacGyver hadn't seen him. MacGyver didn't know how to act around him
so long. Yeah, but that was also, his son was already an adult. Coy knew this man his whole life.
You know what, Greg?
What?
You're probably, I'm sorry. You're right. That was a bad, I couldn't come up with a comparison. So it was the first thing that came into my head.
It was fair. It's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's fair.
Okay. So now we're going to learn a little bit about the Oyoku cult, Greg.
It sounds like, is that like Yoplait?
It is. It's like the Yakisoba, like the noodle bowls, the Yakisoba.
Soba noodle. Soba
noodles. I don't know what they're called.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either. Okay. So basically, Tanika is going to now double his efforts to get Coy in his arms. Now that apparently, because the foundation is involved, Tanika now has to like double his efforts to get Coy.
And he uses that word. Like, he's so like, it keeps cutting back and forth to these sort of mysterious, weird, like,
yes,
dealings with Tanika. He's like, he had, what's this, O'Brien Industries.
O'Brien Industries.
I didn't realize that I underestimated his resources, like, about pulling in the foundation. He's like, we shall double our efforts and we'll get Coy now.
I'm going,
I don't know.
Does Devin really have that much pull? Like, are they really, is the foundation really that feared?
Well, because they were feared because Michael showed up in the black car. I mean, that's what it was. It was the man in the black car. Like, what? And it's always like this very quiet, like, like Zen garden music, you know, anytime, like a really quiet, like bamboo flute sound. I don't know the name of that, that instrument. But yeah, it's like every time that Tanika's on, it's very like calm and like focused.
Yes.
And
he never
very
loses
out of
his
place.
Cool.
No,
absolutely.
No. And when he does lose his cool, he's still not losing his cool.
No, he's not. Okay, so the story behind the Oyoku cult is they are a terrorist cult that was abolished by the Allied command after the war. So Devin and Nick know already that you get the sense that because this is when this happened, mm-hmm. you know that Devin and Nick already know a little bit about the Oyoku cult.
So is this a real thing?
I didn't Google it. I'm
going to while we're chatting. But that's really interesting because I wonder if, Devin and Nick, if they're in the Korean War, maybe they spent some time in Japan like rooting out this cult. Who knows? Who knows? Like, I bet you they've got a lot of backstory that we just don't know about. Again, a lot of redacted, blacked out lines on their resume.
Absolutely. Okay. So they're this terrorist cult that was abolished by the Allied command. They believed, this cult, that they were supposed to rule the world. And Michael mentions at this point in the scene that the Oyoku cult makes the Nazis look like the good humor men. Like, apparently they're pretty bad. Did you Google it?
Yeah.
Did you find anything?
I can't even tell. How do you spell it?
O-Y-O-K-U.
How do you spell it?
O-Y-O-K-U.
Okay, O-Y-O-K-U. I'm trying to find it. That's what I typed in. Whatever.
Anything? Is there nothing there?
No, nothing really.
Okay, so it's a fake cult.
No.
All right, it's a fake cult. It's nothing. So apparently they're worse than the Nazis, according to what Michael says. The Nazis look like good humor men compared to this cult. So Michael leaves to find out a little bit more about Tanika, but Devin sends RC to tail him, but tells him make sure he doesn't know that you're following him.
Right.
And
right.
So he leaves in his motorcycle, the famed motorcycle. And now, I don't think you said you didn't think it was from another episode, but this next scene when Kit launches Michael over the wall onto Tanika's compound, it's absolutely the same footage of a launch that we've seen earlier in the series.
I don't doubt it. I just didn't recognize it at first. And I think it's funny that, so Michael, the first thing Michael's going to do is break into this guy's place. Like, and at the same token, he's also breaking in because Bonnie has illegally hacked into his system also.
Of course. Why wouldn't she?
Of course. So Michael decides to have Kit launch him up onto this walkway, and he immediately starts running and tells Kit to go somewhere else. So instead of Kit being in stealth mode, he hammers it in reverse and does a J-turn, burning rubber, like in the middle of the night. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's like,
what?
Kit, be,
what's happening?
Kit, be quiet. And he, like, the horn goes off like the General Lee.
Yes.
But no, yes. Of course, no one pays any mind to Kit, you know, fishtailing out of the driveway.
No, it's fine.
So when Michael breaks into Tanika's office, he like looks in the corner of the office and sees all these pictures of Koi, like in some sort of a shrine.
It's creepy.
Creepy. And shockingly, right after this moment, Michael's been spotted, Greg.
I know. Well, I want to talk about the Koi shrine.
Please.
I thought it reminded me for some reason of Being John Malkovich. Yeah, only because I watched it again recently. And it's that scene where she goes into what's his name's house and finds this whole room of photos of John Malkovich, like through different ages, like
And
I was like, oh my god, it's Koi. They think he's like the vessel, you know.
Well, that's kind of like we kind of get a little bit more of that. That is kind of what I understand Tanika is trying to do, because Koi has this backstory about being the direct descendant of what did he call the noble scholar Kasufa Tsukuritsu, and it is Koi's destiny to revive the Oyoku cult and rule the world.
So how did this guy figure it out? Like all this time I thought this guy was going to be Koi's father for
real.
Which makes way more sense than him just being some dude that wants Koi to be, that's trying to revive this cult.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
it makes way much more sense. Dave, just keep talking.
He did. It's like he did a lot of deep digging to find this out. Like, how did he know? We don't get that explanation as to like how he knows that Koi is the direct descendant of like the original head of the Oyoku cult. Like, we never find that out. He just gives this like damningly convincing story about how Koi's destiny is to revive the cult and rule the world. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
And this gets me thinking though of a Japanese cult that was trying to be brought back. That was a MacGyver episode. Totally.
It was.
The one with George Takei. Yeah, totally. It was the same exact story.
And the Wish Child. The Wish Child. That's what the episode is.
Wish Child.
Wish Child.
Wish Child. Yes.
That's right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Wish Child 2, Wish Harder. That's what it was. So this would be Wish Child 3, Wish Child with
a Vengeance. Wish Child.
That's... So if any of you are listening to this episode were part of MacGyver, that's the episode title, Wish Child 3, Wish Child with a Vengeance.
That is not it. It's just Wish Child.
Nope, it's Wish Child 3, Wish Child with a Vengeance. I don't give a shit, Greg.
Shit's not involved in this, I don't think.
So I love... So Michael takes down the men who are pursuing him, and RC picks Michael up on the motorcycle, and then Kit... covers for Michael and RC as they drive away. At the same time, we don't see it, but Koi has been brought back to the semi for safekeeping because they think that's the safest spot for him to be while Michael and RC kind of go out and try to figure out what's going on with Tanika.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, sure. The semi is the safest place.
Of course it is.
Sure, because he's not going to wander off.
Well, doesn't Devin say it's because they're mobile? Isn't that Devin's reasoning?
Yeah, and we keep because we keep moving around, it's the safest thing. But I think it's funny, like Coy, he's always got a baseball with him. He's like they really make him try to be like the all American kid, you know. Yeah. And it's fun. It's true. Like he's like, and he immediately starts talking baseball stats with Bonnie. Yeah. And he has a baseball in his pocket, like he brings it everywhere, and he's just like tossing it. I think it's great. Like I thought it was really fun. Like it's Coy. He's kind of one dimensional.
It is, but it's a nice little character bit. But he also that the baseball thing comes back at the nearing the very end too, and it's kind of a funny little moment that he has when he mm-hmm. when he finally runs in and meets up with Tanika. Now I love the next scene too because Nick's employees, because you know how we've seen this before where like you've got the business that's under attack for whatever reason, but all the employees, like no one wants to stay because they all fear for their lives. Again, a complete switch that we've not really seen is that Nick's employees are like, no, you've stuck with us, we're gonna stick with you, and we'll stay here to help you in whatever you need. We will rally behind you, we'll save this business. And I'm like, oh my god, I love these guys.
Yeah, there was a lot of feel good in this episode.
Maybe that's
like
what it was.
Legit. Like I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop, but it never did. It was like,
yes.
It never did. It was just like it was kind of a feel good, you know.
And
thing,
this plays into the fact. So the fact that Nick's employees are so good and super supportive, it plays back into my comment at the beginning of the episode where these are the most idiotic villains. Because at the end of the episode, when we get to the climax, the employees of O'Brien Industries are beating the shit out of all of Tanika's men, like. Just
yeah, because ninjas or not, you don't want to go up against a bunch of like dock hands, you know?
Exactly. They have no idea what they're walking into.
Who would win a fight, ninjas or lobstermen?
Lobstermen. No question. They're gruff. They're just they're rough hands. They're scaly fingers. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Scaly fingers.
I don't know if you can ASMR this. These are my scaly fingers.
Gross.
Sorry. So at some point in this whole moment, RC is apprehended by the ninjas when he tries to sneak onto Tanika's property. And I like this again. Go ahead. What were we going
to
say?
No, he tries to sneak onto Tanika's property in broad daylight. And immediately gets
ninjas
captured.
Ninjas by daylight, though, because they just kind of like appear out of nowhere.
I know. Well, they're ninjas. They just came out of the ground.
That's
they're
true.
Perfect camouflage.
And again, RC, so we assume that he's about to be tortured, and he's being held captive. He's kind of, you know, he's tied up. He's got the bamboo across the back of his neck through his arms, and he's kind of being held up like this. But RC 100% refuses to give up anyone. He disavows any knowledge of the Foundation or Michael Knight or Coy or anyone. Like, and he knows that he's probably going to get the shit tortured out of him, literally.
You know, gross. So again, that's why you need the barn shovel. But you know what? I wonder if Devin has been training him quietly. You know? Like torture resistant techniques. So RC's already been through this through a simulation. So he's not really scared. And also, he knows that if he talks, Devin's going to kill him anyway.
I was going to say, see, we never get the backstory to Devin, but there's probably a menace to him that you're right. He's been slowly training RC into the ways of like when you're taken prisoner, like when, not if you're taken prisoner, but when you're taken prisoner. Here's what you need to do.
Maybe RC is actually the deepest clandestine operative ever.
Oh my gosh!
You know,
yes.
And like Mike, he's like Michael doesn't even know. Bonnie doesn't know. Only Devin, and RC is really Devin's pet project.
I love that so much. So at some point during this, during RC's moment, we notice that he's being recorded by one of Tanika's men. The next scene is back on the semi. So these guys had taken all these recordings and had reassembled all of the audio to make it sound like RC was kind of giving away his location to try and lure the Foundation to them. But I think it's...
But he did. He gave it away exactly.
Yes, which is...
And plus, they also knew where he was.
And I think it's funny because no one else seems to think that the audio sounds funny except for Bonnie. She's like, oh my fucking God, guys, this audio has been doctored. Like, do you not
It's been edited.
Hear it? It's the worst audio cut ever.
Yeah, she's like, it's definitely him, but the intonation's wrong. Like, they've pieced this together. Like, no shit. This whole time. And the funny thing is, wow, Devin said something. Oh, no, we'll get to it. There's something. There's a good line later where, like, Devin's like...
When he talks to Coy?
Well, when he talks to O'Brien.
Oh.
Or when Devin... When the whole scene with O'Brien and Tanika. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah, isn't this the scene where in the background Coy is, like, listening? No, forget
it.
No,
we're almost there. We're almost there. So Michael goes to Tanika's house, but he wants to be, again, wants to be stealthy, because Tanika's going to know that he's coming. And I love that you just see these like quick shots of Michael hiding, but there's just like the director clearly told these guys in ninja suits just to like walk past the camera, because it's just like two random ninjas just like prowling the grounds.
But this is a great part. So Michael and Kit are outside. They kind of know where RC went, so I don't know why they had to send that ransom message.
Whatever.
It's exactly where RC is. And Michael tells Kit to scan the perimeter, and that he finds a bunch of people. He's like, all right, focus on this little outbuilding here. It's like, Michael, I scan RC's vital signs. It's like, so Kit can tell who people are from their biometric data from a distance.
That's one of my notes. I'm like, so he can now he just knows based on the biometrics. Oh, that's RC.
That's RC. Perfect. So one thing I've realized about this whole episode, it was really a stream of consciousness. It went from action to action to action with absolutely no like links between how people got from A to B, no time lapse. Like, it just went to the next phase. And it's more increasingly in the show, Kit is being used as just a tool to get the episode moving.
Yes.
Like, it's conveniently giving him all these things that he can see or not see, do or not do conveniently, just to get the episode moving. He's not a bonus to Michael. It's just like, all right, well, we're stuck against this wall. Michael, I see a secret door over there. Okay, let's go through that door.
Right, whatever. It's now being used, exactly. He's being used as a vessel to just progress the plot. There's no other reason that he's like hanging around anymore, because we've seen all of his features and we don't see anything new. Now it's just, you know, Kit's just there to help kind of move things along.
I know. It's kind of sad.
So Michael finds RC behind the door, but is immediately caught by a net.
Yeah. Well, RC's like, trying to tell him, like, dude, what are you? Don't come in here. It's clearly a trap. Right. Don't worry, RC. I gotcha. Blah! And then, a cargo net falls over him and he gets punched.
Yeah. Okay. Now.
And then Tanika's there, though. He comes into the doorway all menacing. It's like, now is the time where you die very slowly and painfully. Something like
right.
that. I don't know. And he leaves.
Okay, is this the moment we're talking about where Tanika has that late night meeting with Nick?
Yes, yes.
And Tanika is speaking only in code that Michael and RC have been captured?
Well, he says, let's say that, you know, basically he's trying to, you know, one up O'Brien. He's basically like, well, let's say that we're playing a game of chess, and I caught your knight and a black bishop. Yeah, what would you do? What would you do to get them back? And then Devin's in the semi listening. He's like, oh my God, I think he's talking about Michael and RC.
No shit.
Fuck yes, Devin. Come on.
I think Nick figured it out pretty quickly too. He's like, oh wait. No, I'm not letting my son go in exchange for anybody.
Wait a
Michael
minute.
Would be,
a knight Michael... and a black bishop?
What? What the fuck? Yeah, Devin. That was right. Devin's like, oh my God, I think he's talking about Michael and RC. Yeah, no fucking shit, you dick. You misogynistic prick.
Oh, we'll get to that.
I know. But I think it's funny that Nick knows exactly what he's talking about. And Tanika's like, listen, I'm willing to let these two go in exchange for your son. And Nick's like, fuck no. Like, Michael would never forgive me if I let him go in exchange for you taking my son.
It's great.
Off.
So he's like,
I'm
no, we're not
you.
Doing it. And then Tanika's like, all right, well, it is now a matter of honor. I have to destroy you now. Like,
and Nick's like, fine, if you do that, I'll come at you with everything I got.
Yeah.
Just try me, bucko.
Bucko.
Oh, it was great. So Coy is now in the semi. And so it's Coy and Bonnie and Devin. And he's overhearing the conversation about Michael and RC being taken, and he's hearing Devin talk about it, and he kind of gets the sense that if he turns himself in, Michael and RC won't get killed. So very quickly, he just like walks out of frame in the front of the semi and disappears. And then Bonnie leaves to go check on him. 2 seconds, then comes like running back in, like puts her hands in the frame of the door and is like, Coy's gone.
I know. And this is the first time I guess we realized that, oh, I guess you can get out of the semi through the front. There's like a door there, I guess, through their kitchen.
Was it mobile? Do you think it was moving at
no,
this point?
No, because Bonnie says, all right, I'll get things rolling. Because
that's right. Okay.
After Devin's like, yeah, he's the safest here because we keep moving around. But he just leaves.
I just think it'd be funny.
So I'm thinking, Bonnie
was... was moving.
Yeah, he just like tuck and rolls. But like, so if they're not moving, Coy is probably right outside because Bonnie's not gone that long.
No,
she must not have even looked. He's no, like, he's not in here anymore. Oh, well, I guess he's gone.
It was like maybe eight to 10 seconds had transpired between when Coy walks out of frame and when Bonnie goes to get things rolling. He could not have gotten that far.
He's right outside, guys. He's right there.
And so then the next scene, I love that Tanika's plan for throwing everything he has. He's just going to blow up O'Brien Industries to completely just reduce it to rubble. His plan.
But all he wants is Coy. He just wants Coy, and he's just like, O'Brien's in the way, but he can just kidnap Coy. Like, he can coy-nap him. He's going to get coy-napped. Oh, whatever.
and so Michael and RC are now brought out because they're about to be ritualistically killed for whatever reason. So Tanika asks all of his men, how would you like him to be killed? Swiftly, or as the bears played with the rabbit?
What? So I'll leave it up to you to decide. And so, like all the five or six ninja guys that are around them, they're like, bear, right? Bear, swiftly, bear. Like what?
But it was even more unconvincing than what you just did, Craig. Like you, I actually believed that you wanted the bear, the slow death. They were more like bear.
Okay,
bear.
Sure, but where? Like, how big is your property?
I don't.
Like, what? You know, let them go for run away for sport. This whole thing was just horse shit.
It really was. Well, okay. So then Coy shows up and basically turns himself in to Tanika, and he's like, "Listen, take me. Let Michael and RC3 go." But it doesn't work because Tanika's like, "Oh well, he has to be ordained as the master before he can control anyone." And Coy like pulls the baseball out and he goes, "Well, geez, all I really want to control is my curveball." And there's just this silent, like, one take, like, where Tanika just, like, turns, like, dumbfounded and looks at Coy. And then we cut to the next scene.
It's just, like, all this shit, like, the whole thing was written to just fall apart. Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. And then, of course, at this moment, Michael and RC, like, pull a fast one and start beating up on people and getting their asses kicked. And
well,
I don't...
And it's not like so there's no climax here. It's nothing climactic happens because they beat the shit out of all the ninjas. Never once did I feel like the ninjas had the upper hand on Michael and RC, because Michael then radios Kit and says, buddy, we're going to need you. Kit just like drives in, picks him up with Coy too, and they drive away. Like,
right. That's after your favorite scene with the baseball.
After my favorite scene with the when he throws the baseball at the ninja's head.
Yeah. Doink. But it's like he knocks him over. Yeah.
Go ahead. What were we going to say?
That's it. They just fight, and that's it. They leave.
Okay. Now we're back at the semi, Greg, and this is the moment that I just realized that Devin is a misogynistic asshole.
Oh, they're at the foundation's office. They're at Devin's actual office.
Are they at the office now? Oh, they're right. They're at the office. So Devin looks at Coy after he comes back and goes, oh, Coy, I'm sure you're hungry. Go find Bonnie and make her fetch you some breakfast. What a dick.
I thought he said make her fix you some breakfast. So either one. So either have Bonnie go get you breakfast or have Bonnie make you breakfast. It's like, what?
Right.
Poor Bonnie. Like, she gets screwed out of the last one where she doesn't go into the Hollywood back lot. And here she has to make Coy breakfast because she's stuck cleaning the semi again. Oh, Bonnie's just leave her behind. She's good with a vacuum.
But it lends itself to what you said earlier to me on text, though. Like Devin is the foundation. Like, this is it. He's it. There's no one else.
No, because they're all dead. Yes, remember from that previous episode? They're all dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Devin's just killed them all.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that.
He murdered them all.
Meh. He wouldn't do it directly.
That's true.
Maybe he hired Murdoch.
Oh, there's your crossover right there.
Yeah.
Murdoch is everyone in the show. He just plays all the parts. We're going to find out next week that Murdoch was just playing all the parts.
Okay.
What happens is at the end of the series, at the series finale, MacGyver wakes up in the season 5 finale passages when Pete saves him from the ship going. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's what that is. So season 6 and 7 and all 4 seasons of Knight Rider were MacGyver's dream.
Sure. You got
there,
it.
There it is. Okay. So Michael and RC head back to O'Brien Industries, where Tanika and his men are planting explosive charges all around the facility.
Via cleverly, through by hijacking a delivery truck that normally does the rounds there, and
yes.
As they do the rounds to do the deliveries, they're actually planting bombs, which I thought was clever.
I did. I gave them credit for that. I thought it was a nice maneuver. But then Nick calls the gate security and was like, because one of the trucks pulls up and it's not the regular driver. And so when Nick calls the gate security, he says, listen, we got to go over every single one of these incoming trucks with a fine tooth comb. We are looking for explosives. You need to check these trucks as they come in. And naturally, when he goes back to check the truck, Tanika's guy comes out and he just like Chudo chops him in the back of the head and knocks him unconscious.
Well, because there's only one gate security guard anyway.
Of course.
And there's no real gate. It's just a porta potty.
It is. Well, and it's also, did you notice how watery and like how wet?
Yeah, because this isn't it's just some dumpy shit rail yard someplace next to a dock. And it's just full of water and oil and all kinds of crap. And that's where they shot this. That's it.
That's it. Now, explain to me, so did Bonnie hack this or did she just like, work her magic? Because when we're back at the semi for like a quick scene where Bonnie has told Michael that she found the blueprints for what appears to be the locations of all the charges that are being planted, resulting in the destruction of O'Brien Industries. How did she get those blueprints?
Oh, yeah,
she hacked
into Tanika's business. Whatever that is, we don't know.
We don't know what he does,
nope.
But that's okay. It's better left to mystery. I don't think I want to know.
He's a high-end ninja importer.
I don't know what... Man, he's importing some really shitty ninjas, though.
Maybe they're knockoffs. Maybe they're cheap remakes, right, or something.
Fair enough. So, I like this. So, okay. So, they find out that somehow they know where the first explosive is going to go off, and it's going to be the main elevator shaft, but Kit tells Michael, listen, I can't find where Tanika is setting off these bombs until he sets off and detonates the first bomb, so he's going to have to blow something up first.
So Michael's all pissed because, like, you can't find Tanika until he starts transmitting the bomb, the radio signal to blow up the bomb. So he's like, yeah, that's right. We got to wait for something to go off first. And also, like, they're targeting the main elevator shaft. Of what?
I don't know where that's going.
Like, where?
It goes up to nothing.
So, I know. So, but anyway, they find this elevator shaft, blah, blah, blah. But I recognize this entire set. Well, not set. It's an actual real building that was in another MacGyver episode. And I don't remember the name of that episode. But they used that elevator,
it's
too.
It's the one, you had said it already. It's the one with the pregnant woman in the Jeep. Right? And the crane.
Yeah, I don't know the name of
that. The crane lifts the Jeep up.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
Exactly. Because there's some scenes of Kit driving in and out of the building through that doorway. And that's the same doorway that they drove the Jeep onto the crane thing.
I found
the episode.
I'm pretty sure. It's season 2, episode 14, Birthday, with the pregnant woman on the run from her husband who wants her dead after she discovers his dark secret, and MacGyver becomes trapped in an abandoned factory with her delivery inching nearer. I'm looking at pictures right now, Greg.
Yeah,
I think it's the same one.
It's the same building.
Yeah,
absolutely the same building. Yeah.
So Michael
absolutely.
Gets the bomb, and he gets up. He finds the bomb in the elevator shaft, and he gets up onto the top of the elevator, but the elevator starts going up. And so he gets the bomb out.
Mm-hmm.
Where does Michael throw the bomb when he gets back? So Kit lowers the elevator back to ground level so Michael can get out with it. Where does Michael just like whip the bomb somewhere? Because I think I missed that.
I don't even know. I didn't notice that either.
Okay.
I have no idea.
The bomb goes off, which is enough for Kit to find the frequency. And he basically, he says to Michael that he nullified the frequency. so that Tanika cannot set off any more charges. So I love the scene because Tanika starts panicking. He's like pushing the buttons, trying to set it off. And then he just gets in his car and drives away.
Well, he punches his assistant and then leaves. Yeah. Yeah. And then drives away. And they just have this great car chase, which isn't really that great. And then they end up in this big swampy puddle in some other abandoned yard someplace. And they have a puddle fight.
That's it. Michael fights Tanika in a puddle and Michael wins.
Again. But beats the shit, like just knocks, not even, doesn't even knock him out, just roughs him up enough that he's like, okay.
That's it. And that's it.
Game over. Okay.
Well, and then the episode ends with Nick showing his appreciation to all of his men by dropping an American flag in front of the administrative building.
A big one.
A really, probably, really big
probably
flag.
Like a 30 by 40 foot American flag. Enormous. And then Michael does this weird sort of quasi-patriotic speech with sunglasses in front of like all of his workers.
That's very strange.
About family and sticking together and togetherness or something like that.
Okay.
And then they walk out front and there's RC, Coy, and Michael, and there's this weird freeze frame and they say stuff. I don't know. That's how it ends.
That's how it really ends. But it doesn't really matter because I got to tell you, I enjoyed this episode way more than I thought I was going to. For like the last two episodes, the last two official final episodes of the series, like I loved the father-son relationship with Nick and Coy. I also loved, you mentioned it earlier, Greg, I loved that Michael and RC for the last two episodes have had a ton to do together. Like their dynamic is finally starting to get interesting, and it's just really bad that this is the penultimate episode.
I know, because I want to see more of RC. It's like you could see they're writing him in more and giving, because he's very charismatic. One thing I like about him, and I don't know if it's Peter's way of playing RC or just his personality, he's always got the cool on. He's always got swag. Like he's always hip. Like he's always like. He's always a womanizer too. Like he's like another version of Michael Knight. Like he's got swagger all the time, and I think it's great. And I just want to see him in more situations.
Yeah,
but
no.
It's not going to happen.
No, absolutely not. And then like the things I didn't like, we've talked about it. Like Devin just being a misogynistic dickbag. Like I thought like such an out of character moment for him. I also didn't find Tanika to be anywhere near of a huge a threat as they said. Like, he was fun to watch, but I didn't find any substance to the role, unlike, you know, so many other villains in the series. Obviously, we had Garth and Goliath. Even the Phantom from last week had a little more something to do. And I was thinking, like, earlier this season, Mr. Sweaty Hand.
Oh, right, the plastic Sweaty Hand.
Mr. Hard Hand. Like, even he, he had two episodes, I think, to kind of flesh out the character. I just think they've had so many good villains, and again, you're running out of stuff to do with the show, so I get it, but I never really thought he was that much of a threat. Like,
man, you brought it up. Like, I don't know why they got rid of Garth. It's so dumb. I guess because Hasselhoff got tired of playing two characters, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But shit, if the Garth just kept popping up like a bad penny, that'd be amazing.
See, he should have been like a Murdoch, where like maybe once a season, like, you know, even if they kicked it off like every season premiere, Garth would just show back up for an episode just to like terrorize Michael and then disappear again. Like that would have been
great.
Absolutely.
Oh my god!
But he had to drive Goliath off a frigging cliff with his girlfriend and die. I still feel bad about her.
I know she didn't deserve that.
No, she didn't. Greg, did you have any other thoughts? Like, did you like this episode overall?
I did overall, but for very different reasons than why we have been liking episodes.
Yes,
this one was so different and so weird that I liked it because of that. It was, but for the like liking it for the wrong reasons, I guess. It was so disjointed. The characters were so flimsy. Like the ninjas were stupid. Like all the shit that they had RC doing just didn't make sense. None of it added up, but I had such a good time because it didn't make sense.
It was fun. It was just I had a lot of fun watching it, and I wasn't tired. Like, I watched it at 9 o'clock last night, so like I was watching it like completely wide eyed. So I did. I enjoyed that. Did you have a Schmankman this week, Greg? Because I had a scene was my Schmankman.
A whole scene was your Schmankman?
A whole scene was my Schmankman this week.
I think my Schmankman was the guy operating the tape recorder when they were interrogating RC.
Just, he had nothing else to do. He just flipped the switch, flip it off, flip it on. That's it. He's done.
Yep.
So mine was the bear scene where Tanika asks if how they want to kill Michael and RC, if you want to be swiftly or like the bear. And just the ninjas all very unconvincingly, like, they were so nervous in the scene. They're just like, bear, bear,
bear,
bear,
bear,
bear,
bear,
bear.
Bear.
I just like, I'm like, what a fucking stupid scene. But I couldn't help but laugh watching these guys unconvincingly try to tell Tanika they wanted them to slowly die. Like, it was great. It was absolutely great. Greg, do you want to hear what's coming up next week?
Lay it on me.
All right. Next week is, it's the official series finale, but not our series finale. So next week's episode is season 4, episode 21, Voodoo Night.
Okay.
Michael and Kit investigate an apparent suicide that leads them to an elaborate con artist masquerading as a voodoo princess.
Great.
Do you think Baron Samedi is going to come back?
Oh, I hope so. God, yes. MacGyver, that'd be great.
MacGyver as Baron Samedi?
Yeah, that's even better. Uh-huh.
So I said the official series finale because this was the last episode that aired, the last new episode that aired, but we're not doing this as the last. The last episode, we're actually going to jump back to like episode 12 and do the Scent of Roses, which I've said this before. All the fans of Knight Rider consider Scent of Roses to be the true series finale because of the way it ends. So We're going to do this episode and then we'll wrap up with Scent of Roses. And then we'll talk about the future of the show, where we're going to go after that. After Scent of Roses, I think we'll have two more episodes of Knight Rider years and then we're going to launch Airwolf. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. We have the TV movie to watch.
Yep. Do you have a copy of it yet?
I don't know. I have to look at my DVD set. There might be one in there. Okay. I don't remember.
All right.
And then our recap episode.
Do we want to bulk the season 4 recap in with the series recap? Or do we just want to do the series season 4 recap and not do a whole series run?
I have no idea. Right. I don't remember what we've done in the past. No clue.
Maybe we'll just do the season 4 recap and then talk about our thoughts over the whole series and call it right there.
That sounds great. Why not?
So I think we'll have maybe three more weeks of episodes left after Voodoo Night. So I think we're still on par to launch Airwolf sometime near the middle to end of January.
It sounds wonderful. I'm pretty pumped for Airwolf. Knight Rider is going to be a sad one to put to bed, yeah. But we're just going to dredge up Michael Knight as we watch Airwolf anyway, inject him into the story somewhere.
Of course we will. Of course we will. I also have to say that when we get to the TV movie, Greg, I want to talk to, so Mike and Mike from I Used to Watch This, they did the Knight Rider 2000 TV movie a couple months ago. And they had some thoughts. I don't know if you should listen to their episode. You probably should wait and listen to it afterward, but I sense that we may go down the same rabbit holes that they do and have the same thoughts that they do. So I'm looking forward to it. But anyway, guys, so next week, Voodoo Night, then we'll follow it up with the real season series finale, and then we'll kind of go from there. But Greg, any closing thoughts before we say goodnight?
I am a bear hunting a rabbit.
Ooh. All right, guys, listen, for the Knight Rider years, I am Wish Child 3. Yeah.
the rewishing.
The rewishing.
And I am Michael Knight Puddle Fight.
Have a fantastic week, everybody.
Hang on to your fenders, pal.
I'm thinking, kid. I'm not upset.
Your pulse rate is up, your blood pressure is high, and you're gripping the steering wheel with alarming pressure.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.